welcome to the Layer 8 Podcast Season 3, culminating with the Layer 8 Conference on Saturday, October 8th in Providence, Rhode Island. This season, we'll have conversations with social engineers and OSINT investigators who will tell their stories. We hope you enjoy them. Welcome to another episode of the Layer 8 Podcast. We have a very special guest for you today. We have Oliver Lebhart. How are you doing today, Oliver?
Thank you. I'm good. How are you?
I am doing very well. For the benefit of our listeners, could you give a little bit of an introduction on who you are?
Yeah, sure. Thank you for having me in the show. I'm Oliver Lebhart. I'm located in Budapest, Hungary. It's in Europe. I'm a co-founder and CEO of an anti-money laundering and fraud detection software company named Complytron. At Complytron, we develop a website analysis tool that helps investigators to extract digital fingerprints from websites. These footprints are unique patterns and codes that can imply that seemingly unrelated websites are related to each other or related to one of our red flag websites from a Complytron database. You know, we are focusing right now on the anti-money laundering industry, where there are the typical challenges that shady business people and fraudsters are always one step ahead, and legacy tools may not longer be enough to catch them. Adverse media is just the tip of the iceberg. You know, if the journalists haven't uncovered or been able to verify or a story, then there is no trace of a problem. They are always sanctioned, of course, which is really sadly really actual right now. And there is always corporate registered. But consider this. What are you doing if you are an investigator and you have to do a risk assessment on the client, but the company register doesn't reveal much? They have no adverse media. They are not sanctioned. What are you doing? But you have a gut feeling something is not right. And that's the point when digital fingerprinting technology can be very useful. If you have a URL or a domain, maybe we can help you. Luckily, with people and businesses leaving more and more digital fingerprints behind, there are no new ways that your team can uncover more about the target. Our solution uses just the publicly available URL. We compare the code of your target URLs against the known high-risk URLs in our database. And if there is no result, you can sleep well at night. You tried everything, spot a risk. Or maybe based on digital fingerprints, we spot the risk and make more informed decision. So this is in nutshell, but if we want to go in more detail, I would suggest that I will give you the full context and start with the beginning, how we came up with the idea to start this company.
That's going to be a whole lot of fun to dig into and really interesting. So your company is Complytron at complytron.com. Like that's Complytron. In my reading through, some of the things that you are able to do is you make data available for people, whether that's investigators or journalists, to try to get more information about certain people. Or I saw PEP, I think those were politically exposed people or people that might have been sanctioned. So that way that you can deal with anti-money laundering and you can also know your customer. Some of these types of things that have been coming up. But I think one of the things that I also wanted to talk with you about, Oliver, is kind of your background. Where did you get your start in order to get this idea to create the company? Do you have a background in investigative journalism as well?
Yes, my background is in journalism. I used to be a data journalist. I was long-form editor. Even I worked as editor-in-chief by a local newspaper. And for the beginning of my professional career, I was always interested in how to tell a story in an innovative way. Therefore, at the beginning, I was totally into infographics. But not like long after that, I became bored of these glossy dashboards and I turned to more complex data and data gathering methods, which resulted more complex data visualization and storytelling methods as well. I was lucky enough to be able to take part in big investigative and data journalist projects where traditional journalist methods were not enough. So I started conversation with the developers of our new sites and motivated them to take part not only in the development part of the IT infrastructure, but in the story creating as well. After that, we did a lot of things. We created scrapers, used OCRs, and developed our own storytelling and visualization tools. And because all of this, I realized how much more powerful stories can we create when journalists team up with software developers and graphic designers, you know. And we use more complex approach in data collecting. So it was a big thing for me. And after that, I decided with one of my colleagues to create our own new technology company. This was a small software development and graphic design company, but for media industry. And we specified ourselves as a news technology company because we were convinced that modern news journalism will need in the coming years a lot of technological innovation to keep the pace with the increasing number of data sources and be able to process this data. Not to mention the changing reader habits, which demands new ways of storytelling. At the time, we weren't familiar with the OSINT term. If we had only known about it, we would have done a lot of things differently. However, with this company, we created our first scraping projects. Our main focus was data visualization. Yet, not long after that, I became acquainted with the term OSINT. I can remember exactly when I got to know the term. Someone has sent me over the image about an OSINT landscape. I think it was created by Bellingcat. I'm sure you know it, this picture with a lot of logos of OSINT tools in various categories. There was maritime tracker, aviation tracker, image forensics, DNS history tools, and all kinds of OSINT tools. It amazed me how rich, versatile data you can get from open sources and use in investigation and data verification. So very soon, I wanted to create something that can help journalists with their investigations. And there was a challenge which annoyed me a lot as well as a journalist and after that as a tech entrepreneur as well. You know, in Hungary, at that time, I think we are in 2017, basically in whole East Central Europe. I was very annoyed that that time of the rising of corruption of the political elite. There was a general corruption pattern that emerged at that time. It always was the same. People without any trackable business successes became able to buy very valuable assets like factories, lands, real estate, or even media companies, you name it. Or the same people somehow with brand new companies were able to win jobs worth hundreds of millions of euros in public procurements. Investigative journalists, a lot of in these cases were able to show connections to politicians or politicians' family members. In some cases, we had only very weak links, for example, pictures from Instagram, where the affected parties were partying together. But there was a lot of suspicious businesses where we didn't know any link to non-political involvement. It was maybe because the beneficial owner of the company was offshore or the company owner was some kind of stooge. And the real owners used only option contracts to be able to buy a company anytime. So we started to brainstorming what kind of science could we collect to show connection in cases where we just had a strong assumption who is the beneficial owner of a shady business, but we had no evidence. And during this brainstorming, I have read a BuzzFeed article in which the author, I think he was Craig Silverman, showed that seemingly unrelated news websites with very different political attitudes, I'm sure you remember that it was a great story, very different attitudes, both liberal and conservatives, ultra-partisan websites, shared the same Google tracking code, which implicated that these websites were run from the same place. I found that great. It was life-changing moment for me. I knew immediately I want to discover what kind of hidden clues can be, what else can be found in the codes of a website, which indicates some information of the owner of a website. At BuzzFeed, they did this investigation manually. They started simply to collect one by one the tracking codes. And with this amazing OSINT work, they found the owner as well. I love the project. I started to think about two challenges. One, could we automatize the collection of tracking codes? Sure, we can. It was a simpler task. And the second, and this is a more difficult question, could we find another signs which indicates that two websites are connected? Are there any unique patterns in a website code besides Google codes that we can follow during an investigation? That was the two questions we wanted to answer. Luckily, we have got funding from Google Digital News Initiative to create this tool, and Source Code Leak was born. Source Code Leak was the name of our first venture. This was a tool, a website analysis tool, that allows you to scrape maximum 100 websites at a time and compare with each other based on their technological features and coding style. By this, I mean, for example, tracking codes, IP addresses, the geolocation of the server behind, source codes, HTML, JavaScript, CSS, and so on. And based on this data, the software creates a vector of each site. If two vectors are close to each other, it is possible that these websites are developed by the same team. The idea behind this approach was that the website code can help reveal an invisible web because entities often hire the same developers and uses the same technological infrastructure to create their seemingly independent websites. In other words, they don't think to use different web developers to create their various shop fronts. Of course, we had to solve lots of problems to filter out similarities behind because of common technologies like WordPress. But even in a WordPress site, you can find unusual or even unique technological pattern or code snippets. Finally, after a lot of experimenting, it turned out this approach could be really useful. Let me tell a story about a company that turned out to belong somehow to the interest of a powerful Hungarian minister's wife. And if I remember good, they tried to hide it as well. It can be that I don't recall right, so I won't use his name, but it was a great story that time. This story was about a running event organizer company. This running events like marathons and big running races with thousands of runners. This is a quite big industry globally. We were together with a journalist. She was an enthusiastic runner as well. She knew this industry. And she found really strange that this new company, this new running event organizer company, without any track record in organizing running events, somehow was able to manage to get all of the big state-owned companies and ministries as a sponsor. So they got a lot of public money, and this journalist tried out our tool and found that the websites of this running race organizer had the same digital fingerprints than other known businesses of this wife of this minister in question. And this will be an understatement. Does the story raise the suspicion of trading influence at the minimum, I think. So it was an interesting finding. We worked with a lot of journalists, but Source Code Leak was only a website comparison tool. You can use it today. It's sourcecodeleak.com. You can use it free. But we didn't have our own data. We only had this method, this pipeline, how we scrape a website, how we extract fingerprints, and how we compare that fingerprints. At the Source Code Leak time, journalists always ask the question, what data we have? Is it possible that they search for a URL? We show them if there is a possible interesting connection, but we didn't have the data. So and this expectations was a bit unrealistic because they wanted that we show not only URL connections, they wanted that we show interesting URL connections, even better if we deliver the whole story after a simple URL search. You know, it's always a problem and the big misunderstanding with OSINT and technology, that technology will deliver the whole story on its own. But because of that, we decided that we will create our own database. But sadly, we ran out of money and we had to realize that investigative journalist tools are not an attractive investment target. And we have reached a turning point. Since I was always interested in corruption and I have read a lot of articles about money laundering, I got to know there is an industry where is industry standard is to collect political exposed persons and high-risk entities, and which is also more interesting for venture capitals as well. So we decided we will scrape not the whole internet at the beginning, because it wouldn't have been feasible. Only the bad part of the internet. Where are the sanctioned and blacklisted entities, fraudsters, money launderers, fishers, terrorists. So in a nutshell, the really bad guys. That is how we landed in the anti-financial crime industry. So we decided to create a new company with the focus of financial crime and money laundering. We created a sanction and watchlist screening software, political exposed person check software, but with a little twist. We always have the same idea. We always thinking about digital fingerprinting technology. So we started to scrape the digital fingerprints of the bad part of the internet historically. That is how Compliartom was born. We mix this technology, this comparison tool with the data of money laundering and financial crime data. For this venture, we were able to find industrial investors as well. That is how this new technology was born. And you can look into our database. You can search for names, entities, and even URLs.
That's really powerful how you are able to tie together the investigation journalism or even just the OSINT with the technology of the developers being able to put all of this together. And I thought that was really fascinating when you said you had that eye-opening moment of even just comparing the Google tags inside, indicating that the two very different sites were going back to the same owner. One of the questions that I had with that is, does your tool also keep a history of what the sites have looked like or what the source code has been, just in case somebody catches on to what you're doing and they completely update their site and all the source code away from the same technology, away from the same developer, away from the same Google codes, hoping that you can't tie those together anymore? But if you had a history where they were tied together, do you also have that kind of information?
Yes, we have a history and a big archive of these versions of these really shady websites. So we needed to download all these versions because this is a really fast changing environment. Fraudsters publish websites and a couple of days later they delete it and and set up shop elsewhere. So you are absolutely right. This is a really realistic scenario. By fishing, we have fishing data as well. By fishing is way fast, quicker than in other type of fraudsters. They use the websites only for hours. We try to catch immediately this data and make versions of this digital fingerprints. Let me tell a story. It's more difficult to tell a story in this industry because success stories are confidential and our technology preserves privacy. Even we don't know the search history of our users. But I can tell you a story which was our own investigation. From time to time, we analyze our own data and we create networks of the entities of our high-risk digital fingerprints databases, database. We try to figure out whether these websites from really different sources are somehow connected with each other. In other words, does it occur that different warning of different entities from different parts of the planet are connected? The question is, how international are these criminals? Does it occur that if an authority shut down a business in, for example, in the UK, they set up a new shop in another European country? We will publish on this topic a detailed report, but beforehand, I can tell you, yes, there is a lot of cases. Let me tell you a really specific example. There was a fake Bitcoin investor platform. I have here a notice. The name was platinumproinvestment.com. Which was shut down by the Italian authority. And a month later, there was another company, the other Bitcoin websites named 24primeoption.com, which was blacklisted by the Security of and Exchange Commission of Cyprus. And we found out they shared the same code base and some tracking code as well. So we are sure that these two ventures was run from the same place. There was two authorities, one from Italy, one from Cyprus. They didn't know from each other. Both shut it down these websites, but our data showed that these two websites were connected. So I think with these two authorities, we'll be able to spot risk sooner by connecting the dots. And maybe work together more effectively internationally.
I think that's a huge help for so many different organizations and possibly even law enforcement, because we do see that a lot where a criminal or accused criminal organization or company will just change their name to a different company and start doing the same thing all over again.
Yes, that surprised us as well, how connected these websites are, that authorities can cover only the tip of the iceberg. We have investigation that our crawlers, for example, an authority could spot only one website, but with the help of a crawler and with some OSINT techniques, we were able to reveal a whole network of websites, maybe 20 websites. They have different names, different style, different wordings, but because of these digital fingerprints, we were able to reveal that was from the same team.
That's great. And how international is your data? Because I know you're based in Europe. Do you have information on American entities or Asian entities as well?
Yes, we have global database. We have more than 100 scrapers and crawlers. We have US data, Australian data, Japan, New Zealand, all the European countries. So it's, we have a global data set.
And you mentioned that you also have phishing sites where you have the URLs of sites being used for phishing. Do you have a good idea of how companies are using your data? Like one idea that I would have on how to use that is we could, a company could set up their own block list. So if somebody had a list of your data on the phishing sites, then if any of those URLs are sent into the company, then those are just not accessible anymore. Is that a typical use case for your phishing site data?
Patrick, we just begin with the work with this technology. We try to figure out how the industry can use it. But you are absolutely right. That's one case we try to evangelize, that with this data, you can set up a blacklist. For example, a payment provider, it could be a really good filter for new users, because they have to spot not only the fraudsters, they have to spot, for example, theft shows they couldn't pay the bills, and there is risk, financial risk, because a payment provider, if a theft show can deliver a product, payment provider is the last one. He's responsible for that purchase. So it will be an interesting evolution, I think, with digital fingerprinting. We want to lead this conversation. How could we use this technology? The technology is ready, and we have millions of digital fingerprints. So I think we can cover a lot of cases.
And if somebody wants to work with you and be able to use your data, do you have any kind of ways that somebody could integrate that into their own systems? For example, have you set up like an API for companies to interact with your data?
Yeah, of course, we have API, we have user interface, and we have this common Swagger documentation. It's really easy to integrate with us. We have fully transparent pricing, which is quite unique in this industry. We try to make more transparent, and we try to democratize this industry as well, because we have seen that small companies struggle with the security issues. Small fintechs, and we try to make this technology achievable for everybody. And with this pay-as-you-use business model that we have, it's really easy to integrate with us and try out and use this technology for a while.
I like that your company comes from a investigative journalism background, where you wanted to be able to investigate various people and websites and try to put all these ties together for your journalism. But I also noticed on your site that there are other industries that can really benefit from your service, things like banking or insurance or high value traders. Another idea that came up recently was I was attending the SANS OSINT conference, and there was a presentation there given on protecting high-value target people, or being able to do investigations into high-value target people. I've also worked with other people whose job it is to protect, the ultra-wealthy types of people. And I would imagine that they get contacted by lots of people, especially lots of other very wealthy people. Your database, your information, seems like it could be an interesting way to vet some of the other contacts that are coming into the circles of some of these high value people to better understand specifically who they are and what backgrounds they have and what kind of ties they have, in case it doesn't immediately seem clear what other ties a person has. Can you use your data to dig in a little bit further and build out maybe a little bit of a graph as to who else is tied to this person that's coming to me for a business meeting one day?
Yes, in banking industry, in high value traders, this is a very regulated industry. And if you want to categorize our company, you can say we are a regulatory technology company. We help you to comply with this laws and regulatory requirements. What is important in this AML work and screening is to flag the really bad guys, the the red flags are the most important. You can't make any mistakes. If it's about sanction or terrorism financing, you have to prevent that you make business with them. And we are in this business, so we can't really say if somebody is a good business partner or not. We can't show you a corporate web or interest. We can show you if somebody linked to the really bad guys. For example, somehow worked for a sanctioned entity because we found his name or her name at a sanctioned website. Or with this digital fingerprinting, we can show you if his business or her business are somehow connected to a sanctioned or watchlisted entity. So it's all about red flagging what we do. So I think for the initial screening, it's a must. You can't make mistakes. It's really bad for reputation if you have a shared photo with a sanctioned oligarch. But we can't really help you to decide. If we have no data about the person, it can that is not a good business connection, but it's really possible that you can proceed with the person because we didn't find any red flag.
I think that's good how you describe that, where you aren't really giving any kind of subjective information on whether somebody is a good or bad person. You're just supplying the data on what ties this person has, whether they're a sanctioned individual, whether they're on a watch list somewhere, and you're able to give that information to people using your data and let them decide based on the data that you give them whether they want to deal with that person.
Yeah, you are absolutely right. We provide data. We believe in this superhuman philosophy that AI and machine learning, we have a lot of AI models in our pipeline. It's good for repetitive tasks and find a needle. But to decide to make a decision, it can make only a human. And together with the tool, with our tool and experienced OSINT expert or investigator or AML expert can decide whether they want to proceed or not.
With the current situation happening with Russia, Ukraine, and the United States and other countries sanctioning individuals back and forth, your data probably has a lot of value right now, because I personally would have no idea who specifically is being sanctioned or watchlisted or anything like that. And you described how this is very important with regulations, especially in some of these industries, particularly banking, where you have to know exactly who you're dealing with. And you don't want to be dealing with somebody who's on a sanction list for the country.
Yes, sanction screening is a difficult task because it changes very fast. And sadly, because of the recent events, it's huge now. So the responsibility is enormous as well, because sanction politic is only effective how effective your technology to prevent doing business with these people. And it's not only about the list, about the people who is actually on that list, for example, the OFAC list, the US sanction list. It's about all the business associates who are not named on this list. But if you make business with these people, you will be sanctioned as well. And there is a very important rule. This is a 50% rule. If a sanctioned entity or person has 50% influence of another company, then it should be treated as a sanctioned company as well. So this is very, very difficult. This digital fingerprinting technology is good as well, because with this, we are able to reveal the connection between sanctioned entities and an other entity which looks good, but it's connected to the sanctioned entity. So it's a really difficult task, because sanctioned list is only the tip of the iceberg, and you have to examine it all these links.
And I know that we have a number of OSINT investigators, people who like to dig into the data, that listen to this podcast. Do you have any way that they could test out your data, a way for them to get a free trial, maybe for some amount of time, to see if it works for them?
Yeah, we have free trial. They can come to us and try out. No credit cards needed. You can freely try out. And if you like it, you can use it. So it's really, really simple. We have Swagger documentations. We have a self-onboarding system. You don't have to speak with our salespersons and find out how could you possibly work with us. It's really simple. You come try out, even with a disposable email address. We can let you to use user data. We have 50 free searches, so you can try out if it's good for you or not.
That's really great that you make that available and don't require a credit card or any actual real contact information. That sounds like you have a great deal of confidence in your product that people are going to want to sign up for.
You are right.
This has been a whole lot of fun talking to you today, Oliver. I've really enjoyed learning about Complytron and how it works. So thank you so much for joining us today on the Layer 8 podcast.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to the Layer 8 podcast. Please join us in Providence, Rhode Island on Saturday, October 8th for the 5th annual Layer 8 conference. The Layer 8 conference is a 501c3 nonprofit organization as designated by the United States Internal Revenue Service.